Hare. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Prayavrajakacharya Stotashatashishimad is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Prayavrajakacharya Stotashatashishimad is Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Thakur Ki Jai. ISKCON VBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Vartman Guru Vinda Ki Jai. Gopinandi Hariyaribo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 5, text 13. Okay. Text 13. I guess I'll just wait for the verse to get on the board. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mogadrik. Mahabhaga Mavamara. Shuchi Chavasatya Rutodrita Vrataha. Abhrutama Kilabandham. Please chant. تو. Aquila, universal, banda, bondage. You are firm and Was it on the whole time? No, it was okay. Anyways. Okay, I'll repeat the verse. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavana Mogadrik Shuchi Shava Satya Rato Drita Vrataha Uru Kramasya Kilabanda Muktaye Samadhinanusmaratar Vijeshtitam. O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. And thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Om Jnana Tamyandasya Gyananjana Shalakoya Chakshu Unmilita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. What a wonderful purport in Srila Prabhupada. So amazing. I was just thinking when I was reading this, you know, we're hearing in previous verses and purports that the reason that Vyasadeva was feeling despondency was because he had yet to actually glorify directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Narada Muni is enlightening him in this subject matter that he should write for the benefit of all the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. And when I was reading this purport, I was thinking, you know, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam and wrote down Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata for these fallen souls of this age of Kali. But even now, if you give someone the Bhagavad Gita, you know, hardly anyone can actually understand what's going on. So this is the very quick degradation of this age of Kali, that nobody's interested in spiritual advancement. Even if you give someone a small book like Easy Journey to Other Planets, it's very difficult for their mind to comprehend what's actually going on. And also in the purport, something else stood out to me. That only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. So there's a verse in the second chapter of this first canto as describing that by devotional service, automatically knowledge and detachment become manifest in one's heart. And there's this pastime where one devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes Prabhupada describes in classes pastimes that aren't written down in the Krishna book that the devotee never heard before. And Prabhupada explained that if you just keep on chanting, and if you chant purely, pastimes that you've never heard before will become manifest in your heart. So that sentence reminded me of that story. So I was recently listening to a class by Indrajumna Swami Maharaj. He was describing how when he first joined the temple, his second day in the temple, his authorities told him to give a Srimad Bhagavatam class. So he was just a new bhakta, and he describes that he didn't know anything. He just said, you know, Krishna is blue, he plays a flute, and he's God, and he just didn't really know what else to say. And then he asked if there's any questions after just a few sentences. And then a few days after that, he was designated as the Sankirtan leader, just like this fifth or sixth day in the temple. And similarly, you know, Prabhupada pushed his disciples to advance very quickly. In 1967, or I think 67 or 68, Tamal Krishna Goswami joined the San Francisco temple. And within the first 5 months, he was second initiated, and he was considered one of the senior men of the movement. And Prabhupada called him in for a meeting. They would have regular meetings, just him and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And one time, Tamal Krishna Goswami observed, you know, Gaur Sundar and Govinda Dasi, they were married at that time, and Prabhupada sent them to Hawaii to start a center and preach. So Tamal Krishna Goswami describes, this is in Servant of the Servant, that Prabhupada literally had to force Gaur Sundar out of the door and force his bags out of the door and demanded him to go to Hawaii and start a center. Gaur Sundar didn't want to leave Prabhupada's association because he was so attached. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was describing how this reminded him of how a mother bird will push a baby bird out of the nest when the wings aren't completely developed to force the baby bird to learn how to fly. So similarly, Prabhupada pushed his disciples to learn how to preach and advance very quickly. So I'm kind of in the same predicament because I didn't actually want to give class today, but Archita didn't give me a chance to say no. He basically told me yesterday, okay, you're giving class, I'm going to write you down for the schedule. So I'm trying to surrender to that instruction. So we can see in the second to last sentence in this purport, Krishna is called Hrishikesh, which means the master of the senses. So this is one difference between the individual living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that the individual living entity, it is described in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, living entity is called Kshetra Gya. Kshetra means the field, like Kurukshetra, the field of activities. This body is the Kshetra. It's composed of senses giving facilities for the conditioned soul to act within this material world. And the living entity, the soul, is the Gya, the knower of the field of activities. He's observing the activities of the body. So the living entity is aware of his own mind and his own senses. But he's unaware, unless he develops certain mystic powers, he's unaware of what's going on in someone else's mind and senses. But Supreme Personality of Godhead knows everything about everyone and knows the thoughts of everyone. Therefore, we should be careful what we think. But if we're practicing Krishna consciousness correctly, automatically our mind will be, our thoughts will be pleasing to Krishna, or at least we'll be striving to attain that. Know how to serve Krishna nicely, how to please his devotees, how to spread the movement. These are all the thoughts of a nice devotee. So this is actually the meaning of sannyas. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita that sannyas actually means full dedication to the service of Krishna. It's not a material designation. It's actually a mentality. So we should all be striving to actually have the mentality of a sannyasi, the full dedication to the service of Guru and Gauranga. So the Maya bodies hold the Ekadanda sannyas. Ekadanda is the one arad danda that they hold that represents that everything is one, everything is Brahman, that ultimately individuality is false, this world is false, everything's illusion, and therefore they renounce all activities in this world, or at least they're supposed to. But we all know, you know, Prabhupada mentioned so many times how because it's an artificial position, the Maya bodies have to fall back down into materialistic philanthropic activities in the form of opening schools and hospitals, which actually have nothing to do with the soul. So this is considered artificial renunciation. And just speaking to Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the 19th chapter of Mandya Lila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing the concept of achintya beta beta tattva. He describes that, you know, the Vaishnavas see in a higher sense, that we see, yes, everything is Brahman, but in the sense that everything's Krishna's energy. And the living entity is also Krishna's entity, Krishna's energy, but we're all individual. So Rupa Goswami describes this also, repeating the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He describes how just completely rejecting everything in this world is artificial. But on the other hand, if someone sees that everything belongs to Krishna and it uses the objects of this world for the service of the proprietor of the objects, this is true renunciation. So the example also is given if someone sees a wallet on the ground. You know, a materialistic person will take that wallet and keep it for himself, you know, dishonest person. Whereas a monist might see the wallet and artificially reject it and just forget about it and just walk away acting like he didn't see anything. But someone in true knowledge will, you know, pick up the wallet and give it to the person it belongs to. So this is actually the Vaishnav. We're returning Krishna's energy for Krishna's service. So this is the meaning of, you know, Vaishnava sannyas. They hold the tree danda. You know, tree means three, danda means rod. So the three rods that represent the body, mind, and words completely dedicated to Krishna's service. So every word we speak, every movement that we make, every thought we have is supposed to be a loving offering to Krishna, a love offering to Krishna. So one who's 100% sold out in this way, Krishna actually uses as his instrument. Just like this word Hrishikesh, like I was describing, also in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes how because Krishna is the controller of the senses and Arjuna was a pure devotee, Krishna actually used Arjuna and temporarily bewildered him so that the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And in the same way, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj was temporarily bewildered and committed a small offense to a rishi and therefore was cursed to die within 7 days. And thus we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also the legendary Harinam Ananda, he describes the secret of him distributing so many books was he understood that Krishna's mercy could flow through you if you just try not to get in the way of it. You know, Lord Chaitanya wants these souls to be delivered. The only thing that's getting in our way is our artificial impositions and our artificial restrictions within ourselves, our false ego. So the more pure-hearted we become, the more dedicated we become. Krishna actually uses us as an instrument. So speaking of renunciation, you know, really, the only thing we have to renounce is the misconception that we have anything to renounce because nothing belongs to us. It's like going into a bank and just, you know, saying, I renounce all this money. And people will think you're completely crazy because the money doesn't belong to you in the first place. So in the same way, you know, Sri Upanishad guides us in this way. In the first mantra, Isha Vasya Idam Savam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktinam Bhujita Madhgrida Kasya Svidanam. That everything animate and inanimate within this universe is controlled and owned by Krishna. So one should accept only those things which are set aside as his quota, and not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So I had a small realization on this point. A couple years ago, I was traveling with Ekashman Prabhu and Srini Tai Prabhu in our van. And our van's only big enough to have 3 people. When we rest at night, we lay side by side, like one person, another person, the other person. And Ekashman Prabhu is very austere personality. He would go to bed a little bit early and wake up very early so he could chant more rounds. For some reason, he would like to lay in the middle. So every night, I'm serious, every night without fail, he would lay in the middle and end up, when he was sleeping, he would turn on his side in such a way that he would take most of my side also. So Srini Tai had like this huge space, Akashma had this huge space, and I literally had like maybe 2 feet of space that I was. But Ekashma Prabhu at that time was the van leader and, you know, my senior devotee, so I didn't say anything to him. Although it bothered me every night, I was trying to, you know, just accept this as Krishna's mercy and try to be humble and tolerant. So I would very meticulously try to crawl in. I would have to crawl into the sleeping bag, and I didn't want to budge him because I didn't want to wake him up. And I would, like, crawl in. I'd be squeezed up against Ekashma Prabhu in the van wall. And I would go to sleep like that every night for like a month. And then one night, I did that again. And I was laying there and squished up. And I was thinking, for some reason, Krishna gave me some realization. I think it's because I was trying to be somewhat humble or something. Krishna gave me the realization that, you know, I became actually very grateful that Krishna has given me at least this 2 feet to lay down, you know, 2 by 6 feet to lay down. And I kind of realized that actually I actually don't deserve even this much. I don't deserve to be in this van. I don't deserve to be distributing books and be in the association of devotees. You know, because of my sinful past, I deserve to be in a hellish condition somewhere. But Krishna's mercy has given me these 2 feet where I can lay down. And my heart became grateful, and I was just chanted myself to sleep. So we can see that the less we have in this material world, the easier it is to remember Krishna. The more simplified our life is, the more easier it is. So, you know, just like Sanatan Goswami, when he left the he got out of prison because he gave the guard all his gold coins. He didn't want anything to do with money. He knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on his way to Vrindavan. So when Sanatan Goswami got out of prison, he decided to walk towards Vrindavan. And he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu somewhere else. I think it was Prayag. If I'm mistaken, you can correct me at the end. And but on the way there, Sanatan Goswami had one assistant. And that assistant actually had good intentions. So he secretly kept 8 gold coins with him, just in case of emergency. And when Sanatan Goswami found out about this, he told him to give away all the coins. He didn't want any burden with him. And the assistant gave all the coins away except for one. He kept one secretly in his pocket. And when Sanatan Goswami found out about this, he humbly sent the assistant home and decided just to go by himself. And he accepted torn loincloths and didn't want anything with this material world. All he wanted was Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So in this purport, it's also describing, you know, this whole section is describing how Vyasadeva is about to compile Srimad Bhagavatam. In purport, Prabhupada describes how people in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. So when we go out on book distribution, you know, I actually had this nice interaction on this previous marathon. I discovered a new way to distribute books, actually. So I'm about to reveal to you a secret. One time I was in a parking lot at Walgreens, and the school we're about to distribute at was just maybe 5 minutes away. And I was packing my bag in the Walgreens parking lot. And while I was packing my bag, I was on the side of the van with the doors open and boxes were on the floor. I was packing the bag, and people were walking by. And something inspired me within the heart. You know, it kind of looked like a scene. I was making kind of a scene in the parking lot. So in my heart, I was inspired. I just started pointing at the boxes and asking everyone walking by, did you guys get one? And people literally started swarming to the van, you know, trying to see what was going on. They just thought there was like an event going on. And I was just, yeah, did you guys get one? And I was just showing books to everyone. And people were actually coming from far away to see what was going on. And I stood there for a few minutes just, and literally everyone took books and gave nice donations. And so in this way, Krishna inspires the devotee within the heart. If he's trying to surrender, if he's trying to take up this mission, somehow Krishna will inspire us. And one time in Utah, this happened a couple years ago, I was also distributing books, and a yama, by the way, is a code word for security. Like Yamaduta. So we call security Yamas. So a Yama was coming, and I can tell, I got the vibe that, okay, he was looking at me. He's coming towards me. And I just acted like I didn't see him, and I very nonchalantly walked into some building. And right when my thought was, if I don't hurry up and get out of here, he's going to catch me, and I might not be able to come back to the school, you know, in the future. So my thought was, at least I can get away, sneak back into the van, and that way I can come back to the same school in the future. So I very nonchalantly, I walked into the building, and then I just very quickly just walked, and I turned to the next corner I could turn into, and it just happened to be the men's bathroom. So I went into the men's bathroom, and I kind of got the sense that the Yama walked into the building also, and he walked past the bathroom. He didn't know I went in. He was looking for me, though. And I was in the restroom, and I was just waiting. I was going to wait a couple minutes. But there were people in the restroom, you know, doing their business, doing their duties. And I just thought, well, why not just distribute books in the bathroom? So people were waiting for the urinal stalls, and I was distributing books to people that were waiting in line, and I was describing the Bhagavad Gita to someone, and then someone in the toilet stall who was sitting down doing his thing, he yelled out, he asked, "Is that the Bhagavad Gita?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Yeah, it is. Do you want one?" He's like, "Yeah." So I hand him the Bhagavad Gita underneath the little space for the door, and he's asking me questions while he's on the toilet, and then he said, "Hey man, here, just take this book for a minute. I'm using the restroom. After I wash my hands, I'll talk to you." So yeah, he ended up taking the book and giving a nice donation, and then I walked out of the bathroom and I was heading towards the van. Right when I was about to get to the van, the Yama caught me. The security caught me. But he was like the nicest Yama I ever met. Very nice guy. He was actually happy that we were there, because he was asking me, "Okay, what are you doing?" And then I told him what we're doing. I said, "We're missionaries. We're from the Hare Krishna temple." He said, "Oh, you guys are from the Hare Krishna temple." He said, "I grew up like a block away from the temple in Provo, in Utah. He said, "You guys are the nicest people ever." He said, "No, it's no problem. You guys are here. You know, just next time, just sign in, and you guys could just pass out your books. No problem." So I've been having this realization lately. I even told Bhakta Davis Prabhu, the devotee who's been traveling with me lately. I would just be like driving in the van, just feeling happy, distributing books, and I just revealed my mind. I said, "You know, I really don't want to die right now, because I'm just having too much fun just being a devotee, you know? I'm having a blast." And then I just thought, well, wait, when I leave my body, then I might go back to Godhead. You know, so it's like a win-win situation for the devotee in Krishna consciousness. It's exciting, it's adventurous, it's fun, and at the end, we go back to Godhead. So Satchinandana Maharaj tells this very nice story, how I think it was in France, I can check, but I think it was in France. One Mataji, she was distributing books every day, and he describes, you know, she didn't do huge amounts of books. She just very simply, humbly went out and did her service very steadily. And there was a festival going on at the temple. So Mataji was walking back to the temple, and when she was crossing the street, she actually got hit by a car and left her body. And the devotees, you know, this was sad news. The devotees went to Prabhupada and explained what had happened. And Prabhupada actually said that she went back to Godhead because of her service. And this was only when the movement was a few years old, you know. So a devotee that's just really dedicated to the Sankirtan mission, dedicated to serving Srila Prabhupada, just even within a few years can go back to Godhead. You know, Jayananda Prabhu was such a hard worker. Within 10 years, I think he was in the movement for 10 years. He got cancer, left his body, and Prabhupada also said he went back to Godhead. There's a statement like that. So, you know, in that way, you know, in the 1960s, the movement was incredible. Like I was explaining, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, 5 months in the movement, second initiated, considered one of the senior men. It's really amazing, you know, just people accepted Krishna as God. It's really amazing. You know, the hippies, they rejected Christianity and all Western religion, Kaitava Dharma, all false religious systems, and were just into intoxicants, so many illicit activities. They wanted nothing to do with God, most of them. But when Prabhupada came, you know, they rejected all the rules and regulations of different religious systems. When Prabhupada came, he gave a religious system that had more rules, more restrictions, you know, more things you had to do, more austerities. But they very enthusiastically took it and spread it all over the world. It's because it's the real thing. You know, when the real thing comes, it acts. So, you know, I was up at the observatory the other day, and we have Krishna book on our table. And one time, you know, sometimes little kids will come and look what's going on. And these two little kids, it was one girl and one boy, I think they were siblings. And their parents were off in a distance, you know, talking, kind of keeping an eye on them. And I was showing them the pictures in the Krishna book. The little girl especially was really interested, saying, "You know, this is Krishna." And usually when the little kids come, I show them the picture of Krishna, and I say, "See, that's Krishna. Can you touch his feet?" And they touch his feet. I say, "Okay, now put it on your head." So they put it there. And I say, "Can you say Krishna?" And I get them to chant. And I show them pictures of Krishna and Balaram killing Dhenukasura, all these pastimes, Agasura. I said, see, this is the spiritual world. This is where we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be playing with Krishna. Doesn't that sound really fun? And the little girl just looked up, you know, very innocently and said, is Krishna God? And I didn't even mention that. I didn't say God. I was just, and somehow this little girl can sense that Krishna was God. You know, it's when I was new here, I looked like a caveman actually. I was half intoxicated when I came here. It was in September of 2012. It was my first time here because I got a book, Perfection of Yoga, I found on the ground in Chicago. I read it. Prabhupada convinced me that, you know, this is the way to go. But I didn't know there were devotees or temples or anything. And I was kind of a modern hippie myself, I guess you could say. I was hitchhiking around the country. Then I ended up staying in Venice Beach. I was living on the sand there for some time. But I would read the Perfection of Yoga every day. And I was trying to follow the principles that were in the Perfection. I was already a vegetarian. And I didn't gamble. But the other two things, I didn't understand why we had to give up. But I would go off into a distance. I didn't know what chanting Hare Krishna meant. I would read, okay, we're supposed to chant Hare Krishna. I said, chant? What does that mean? Like, does that mean in my mind I just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? Does that mean out loud? I didn't know there were temples or anything. But I would try to minimize my eating. I was trying to perform austerities, although when it lasts long, it would last only a few hours, and then I would come back and eat a bunch. But then one day, you know, I would see the devotees go out on Harinam, and I was just like, wow, these people are like amazing. And I'd see them like raising their hands, chanting, dancing. And I was like, this is something's different about these people. And one day, you know, Banabhata Prabhu, every Thursday, used to go down to Venice Beach and do Food for Life. He would pass out a bunch of the leftover prasadam from the restaurant. And then I was told that, okay, the Hare Krishnas give free food. So I went there, I got a plate, and then the Perfection of Yoga was on the table. You know, he's also just, and then I connected both. I said, oh, these are the people that this book comes from. And then I started talking to Banabhata Prabhu. I probably talked his ear off. He didn't even say anything. He was just listening. And he said, here, just come to our temple. He gave me the Sunday feast invitation. And I came that Sunday, and I just never left. I just stayed here. So that's been a little over 5 years now since I've been here. And I remember when I came into the Sunday feast, people were laying on their stomachs, bowing down. I had no idea. I was like, what are these people doing? This is kind of very unique. I remember the smell, the incense and the prasadam. And I remember Ishana, Mataji, Ratna Prabhu's wife. For some reason, I didn't acknowledge these doors. I went around and I tried to go in through this door, and Ishana went out, and I asked, I want to check out the temple. You know, she's very fixed. She's like always in trance or something. She's really, really pure devotee. And she very gravely just said, it starts at 4:30. And I just, okay, I'll come back at 4:30. So I just hung out here and came in at 4:30, and I saw the deities in the altar. And I don't know if she remembers this, but I asked David Dahiti Mataji outside, I said, what are the statues on the stage? You know? And she was describing, actually, those aren't statues. That's God himself. And for some reason, I just accepted it. I just, okay, that's very far out, but if that's God, okay. You know, the similar thing happened in the early 1960s. Shama Sundar Prabhu in San Francisco, when Srila Prabhupada first showed them Jagannath, the people were asking, what is that? And Prabhupada said, that is God. And then Shama Sundar explained how they just accepted it. They just accepted Prabhupada's words. And he said, only in the 1960s, on Haight and Ashbury, would people accept Jagannath as God. So we can see that Krishna put Prabhupada in the right place at the right time to the right people to spread this movement. So, also one other thing I would like to explain. I've been looking at the deities lately, and for some reason, I don't know if it's just me or if it's for real, they look more beautiful than ever. And I don't know if anyone's noticed who's not a Pujari, but Krishna actually has a freckle on his right cheek. Has anyone noticed this? No? And he also has a very more faint freckle, a half inch under his left eye. So this is, you know, we should be noticing things like this, completely absorbed in the holy names and the form of Krishna. And, you know, a lot of times I laugh, like we were Savas Prabhu after the January 1st when he was announcing the book distribution scores. We were all having a good time laughing out there, just thinking, you know, materially we look like kind of weirdos or like losers. Like, who wants to live with no money, you know, nothing at all, just going out and distributing books every day? And then even staying in a van makes it even more weird. Like, if you tell someone you live in a van and distribute books and you don't even get paid for it, they think you're completely crazy. So a smarta brahmana in India, if you saw the way we lived, you would probably flip out that, you know, these people are second initiated and considered, you know, Brahmins. You know, we're living in the van. You know, sometimes we have to transcend the three modes of nature in the sense that, you know, we can't really, like, for example, for the whole marathon, I only did laundry once because I was so busy. I didn't have time to do laundry. I didn't clean the van. The van was a mess. And I only shaved my head once. I just didn't have time. I hardly had time to read, what to speak of, you know, clean the van and make things look nice. And so if a very pure Brahmana saw the way we lived, they would think we're kind of a little bit crazy. But Prabhupada is actually giving us a higher realization that even despite having to go sometimes transcend the rules and regulations in for the sake of spreading the Sankirtan movement is actually a higher realization and a higher mission. So that's all I have to say for now. If there's any questions or comments, you can please ask or add something. Thank you very much. Sachi Tanoi Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a very inspiring class, Prabhu. I don't know if this will be a question, but might end up in a question. A couple hours ago, one devotee asked me, how does it feel to be close to Krishna? And I thought, well, I will give him a philosophical answer. But then I thought, no, he wants to hear my personal realization. So I smiled and I thought, I will let you know when I'll be there. But I listening to your class, and especially when you were mentioning that at one point you were thinking, I don't want to die. What will happen if I die? I'm not going to be able to distribute books. And then I thought, yeah, that's it. That's one answer. It wouldn't be that, if that person will ask you the same question, what would you say?
What would I say? Someone asked me, how does it feel to be
close to Krishna?
Well, I would answer in different ways to particular people. If the person's new, like, is he a devotee?
No, he's a devotee.
If he's a devotee, then, of course, you know, the Vaishnava attitude is we understand that we're very far away from Krishna. That, you know, like the six Goswamis are describing how they're in their heart's pain because they can never see Krishna. So if it's a devotee asking me, you know, obviously I'm not close to Krishna at all. I have a very far way to go. I'm just dealing with going through Anartha Nivritti, trying to cleanse my heart. But if like someone new was coming in, of course you have to answer in such a way to inspire them. So you can explain, you know, it's obviously, you know, even when you're engaging in Anartha Nivritti and you're in the lower stages, when you're in the lower stages, you know, Nectar of Devotion explains how automatically by engaging in devotional service all material miseries go away and one automatically feels transcendental happiness. So yeah, like that, you know, for a new person, I would explain that it's the highest pleasure, it's a higher taste than the material world and things like that. But if it was a devotee, you'd take the humble position. He's probably more advanced than I am. So, is that okay?
Thank you. That's good. That is good.
Okay, Jai. All glories, Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.